From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, the pressure created by Democrats on the Trump administration over the border crisis has boomeranged. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi conceded to her caucus that they had to accept the $4.6 billion Senate version of the supplemental border funding bill that we spoke about yesterday. That bill does not include the harmful policy provisions that the White House opposed. The move has reportedly incensed the extreme progressives in the Democratic ranks. How significant is this concession? Maryland Congressman Andy Harris will join us in just a moment, where he has just walked off the House floor where they voted on the measure. And who was the winner of last night's Democratic presidential debate, part one? I actually don't think the winner was on the stage. I think the winner was President Trump. We'll talk about how it appears the candidates are trying to outdo one another with their extremism. Liberty University professor Dr. Dave Bratt, former member of Congress from Virginia, joins me with some analysis. And Travis Weber, our vice president of policy and government affairs, will join me as I play for you my favorite clips from last night's debate. You won't want to miss that. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. Let me remind you once again, as we come down to the wire of our fiscal year ends June the 30th, we'd love to have your support as you partner with us. The only way this program goes out across the 350 stations or so that it's on is because of partners like you all across America supporting us as we advance faith, family, and freedom, not only on Washington Watch, but right here in our nation's capital day in and day out. We'd love to have your partnership. If you would like to join us in this effort, I've got some folks on our team standing by to take your call, and we still have a portion of that match available that I have been talking about all week. For every dollar you give, it'll be matched by another dollar. So $10 becomes $20, $50 becomes $100. Give us a call, 800-225-4008, 800-225-4008. Anytime during the program, some of our folks standing by to take your call. All right, President Trump said yesterday that he hated to see the heart-wrenching photo of the dead Central American man and his young daughter who drowned in the Rio Grande when they were trying to reach the U.S. You'll recall we discussed that last night on the program with Mercedes Schlapp, assistant to the president. Well, as he was leaving Washington, D.C. to attend the G20 in Japan, this is what President Trump had to say.
I hate it, and I know it could stop immediately if the Democrats change the law. They have to change the laws.
He went on to say that the father was probably a wonderful guy with his daughter. Things like that wouldn't happen if the laws were changed. Democrats began to use that unfortunate event to put pressure on the Trump administration to stop border enforcement, but the effort boomeranged as just moments ago Nancy Pelosi announced the House would have to accept the Senate version of the supplemental border funding bill. Yesterday, Senator Schumer took to the Senate floor to talk about this unfortunate event that took place with the father and daughter drowning. Here's what Chuck Schumer had to say.
President's actions at the border are a whirlwind of incompetence leading to pictures like this.
And as he held up a picture of that tragic event. Joining me now to talk about this, Dr. Andy Harris, congressman from Maryland's 1st District. He serves on the Appropriations Committee, and he just voted on the measure. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, Tony.
So there was a lot of angst in the Democratic ranks on the House side having to accept the Senate version of this border funding bill.
Look, there was, because the Senate, of course, didn't think it was necessary to put in those the language that the House wanted to put in. You know, the president's doing as good a job he can, given the resources he's given. The fact of the matter is that the catch-and-release program, which was started under President Obama, has yielded hundreds of thousands of people crossing our border, 145,000 crossing illegally that we know of last month. And when this is going to happen, our facilities are going to be overrun, they're going to be understaffed, and the Democrats whistled past the graveyard for the last 2 months. The president said this was a crisis coming up. We're going to run out of money in June to take care of these children, and they didn't care. I believe that they actually wanted a crisis. I think that that very sad death of that father and that 2-year-old, I think what it did is it showed them that this was not a manufactured crisis. There's an actual crisis there. The way you deal with it is you have to appropriate dollars, and then I think you have to change the policy that attracts people to want to come across the border and break U.S. law. And it's a bad policy we have. It's a policy to incentivize illegal action, and we have to change that policy. I'm not sure we're going to do it with Nancy Pelosi as Speaker.
Well, this, she did not want to accept this, and there were members in the ranks of the Democratic caucus in the House that did not want to take the Senate bill, as you pointed out, because the policy provisions that were inserted by Democrats in the House version, which the White House opposed because they said it would make the situation worse if the Democrats succeeded. So this was a pretty big win for the president and the Republicans to force Pelosi and the Democrats to accept a bill that does provide funding to address the humanitarian crisis on the border without the liberal strings attached.
Yeah, it's a victory for common sense and for compassion. The fact of the matter is, it's just common sense that, you've created this problem. We have to solve it. We have to have the monies to solve it at the border. And the compassionate thing to do now going forward is not to create more incentives. It's actually create a disincentive for someone wanting to take young children across, 1,000 miles of desert and then to attempt to swim across the river because someone has held out the false hope that they will be given legal status here in the United States, which of course we know, Tony, that over 80% of the people who apply for asylum don't get it. And then when the president wants to enforce the law and deport people who have an immigration judge who has a legal deportation order, then they don't want that to happen either. I mean, we've got to just start enforcing the law.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. Dr. Andy Harris, Congressman from Maryland's 1st Congressional District, my guest, talking about the House just voting on the Senate version of the supplemental appropriation for border security and humanitarian relief. How far will this get us, Dr. Harris, in terms of addressing the issue at the border?
Well, again, it'll allow us to take care of those children and those families who are crossing the border, again, because they have tremendous incentive now to cross the border with an asylum policy that doesn't work, with a Flores judgment that doesn't work. We're going to take care of those children, those families, but in the end, this doesn't solve the problem until we make it clear, as the president will make it clear, look, if you come here and you're illegal and you have a deportation order, you will be deported. I mean, we have to send the message that we are going to at some point enforce American law, faulty as it is because of the asylum loopholes that still exist.
I mean, isn't it the humanitarian thing, the compassionate thing to do is actually to enforce the law, as you say, to take away the incentive for people to, in many cases, bring children into a very dangerous situation, and oftentimes those children are not their own. We've talked about that, how children are being used as basically decoys. They're being brought across. They're not related to the adults that have them, but it helps them in the process. I mean, you would think that if the Democrats are so concerned about people, so concerned about showing compassion, they would actually enforce the law.
Absolutely. The bottom line is one of the things that Nancy Pelosi and the liberal Democrats wanted to put on this bill was something that wouldn't allow the Health and Human Services Department, which is taking care of these children and finding sponsors, to actually pass information on who these sponsors claim to be to ICE, so that we know whether or not these are cartel related, so that we can stop the human trafficking that occurs. Again, you would believe that if they were so concerned, they would stop the incentive to bring families. Up until now, Tony, it's mostly been males who come here to get a job illegally, but they haven't brought their families, and now they're taking the risk of bringing their families because they believe, again, because the asylum laws have so many loopholes, that they will ultimately be given legal status here in the United States. And They can't. I mean, under the law, they cannot get legal status. So it's a false hope we're creating. This problem is created because of these loopholes. We have to close these loopholes in the asylum law. And again, if we need more workers, let's go ahead and reform our immigration laws. But for heaven's sake, until then, you have to disincentivize bringing families, women and children, across 1,000 miles of desert in the summer, with all the dangers that accompany that.
You know, this has become, I mean, this has been, I shouldn't say it's become, this is, I've been here in Washington now for 16 years at the Family Research Council. This was an issue when I arrived 16 years ago. And it's kind of been an ebb and flow in terms of the focus. I think it has reached a feverish crisis proportion, one that we've not seen before to this extent. Do you see a pathway forward in actually addressing this situation, which, as we saw, will save lives?
No, Tony, I'm afraid that, the president will have to be reelected. We'll have to reestablish a House majority on the Republican side. And then I think we will deal with true immigration reform, where we change the laws to make sense. Unfortunately, the Democrats proved today they're merely playing politics with.
I think we lost Dr. Harris there. Let's see if we can get him back. All right, we'll see if we can get him back on. We've got a couple minutes left here. This issue. All right, I think we got him back. Dr. Harris?
Yes.
Yeah, pick up where we left you there.
Yeah, the fact of the matter is, thank goodness for the 40 or 50 moderate Democrats who pushed back on House leadership to say, look, we have to solve this problem now. We can't kick this can down the road anymore. Stop playing partisan politics with this. The vote in the Senate, my goodness, 84 senators hardly agree on anything over there. They agreed that this was a good bipartisan solution, a good first step to solving this problem. And again, it's good that some common sense prevailed in the House today.
When you look at, like, for instance, the Democratic, I'm going to talk in just a moment with one of your former colleagues, Dave Bratt. We're going to discuss last night's part one of the Democratic presidential debates. But you have several of the Democratic presidential candidates are for open borders, no borders. I mean, there's no solution there to the immigration crisis. This really has become an issue that if the Republicans do not have the ability to solve this by being able to pass something through, it's not going to happen.
Look, I absolutely agree. The fact of the matter is, you're right. It was kind of a race to see who could be more open borders. And the bottom line is, the American people are watching, especially working class Americans who know what happens if you open the borders. You can't have an open border in a welfare state. We're very close to being what anyone could describe as a welfare state. Wages are going to go down. The taxes on hardworking Americans are going to go up to pay for that welfare state. It would be open borders, or it would be a disaster. And I think the average American, last time, that this is why President Trump won. He listened to what the average American was thinking. The average American thinks open borders.
Well, we lost him again. Well, folks, I hope you're still here, because when we come back on the other side of this break, former Congressman Dave Bratt, Dr. Dave Bratt, I should say, Dean at Liberty School of Business, will join us to talk about that presidential debate. I mean, there really is a race to see who can be the most extreme. It's mind-boggling. But we're gonna play for you a few of the highlights, and then later in the program, I'm going to give you my favorites. So don't go away. More Washington Watch to come.
Today, military personnel are at greater risk than ever of suffering from a mental health condition. On average, 21 active and retired military members take their own lives every day. Richard Gleason, a military and veteran advocate in the area of mental health, recently shared evidence that faith-based solutions can help stop this crisis Here's what Richard had to say.
There's new science out that they watch people while they're praying or have a religious relationship. The frontal part of their brain, if I'm correct in remembering what they told me, it strengthens it. It reduces depression, reduces anxiety and stress while you're doing it. So not only did God give us prayer as a way to alleviate our spirit, it also alleviates our mind and our bodies. Our bodies react in a positive way to a faith-based relationship.
Visit frc.org/speakers to hear more.
If you're like me, you care about the future of our country. Now more than ever, it is vital that we stand up for biblical values. This year, you can. Come to the annual Values Voter Summit in Washington, D.C. on October 11th through the 13th and join thousands of Americans like you who want to change the culture so that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. This year, we're calling on Americans to pray, to vote, and to stand firm as we fight back to win the culture. Invited and confirmed speakers include Dana Lesh, Sebastian Gorka, Bill Bennett, Laura Ingraham, and Reverend Franklin Graham. Now is the time to stand for truth. There will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a biblical worldview on issues like religious liberty, the LGBT movement, the sanctity of life, the realities of socialism, and more. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Did you know that babies survive failed abortions? Sadly, many of these babies are denied their human right to life and are allowed to die. Currently, there is no federal criminal statute in place to protect these babies after they are born alive. Congress and state legislatures across the country have responded by putting forth legislation to protect infants who survive abortion. However, leftist politicians have blocked efforts in Congress and in state legislatures to pass the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which requires that life-saving medical care be given to babies born alive after failed abortion attempts. We must decide as a country where we stand on the issue of infanticide, to either pursue humane protections for those most vulnerable in our society, or continue to subject innocent human life to the whims of abortionists. For more information, visit frc.org/bornalive.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. And again, we've got members of our team standing by to take your call if you'd like to partner with us to make sure Washington Watch continues to go out over the airways of America. 800-225-4008. 800-225-4008. We have a match. Financial match out there as we come down to the end of our June 30th fiscal year. Every dollar you give will be matched by another dollar. 800-225-4008. All right, John Harris, editor for Politico.com, wrote that, quote, "There are people who argue that the Democratic Party's steady leftward progression during the Trump years is largely an optical illusion, a distorted impression one gets from assigning too much significance to social media noise or flamboyant figures like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. 10 Democrats making their case to be president on the debate stage in Miami Wednesday night suggests a much different conclusion," he wrote. He goes on to say, "This is a party eager to go on the ideological offensive, not just against Donald Trump, but against an economic and political power structure that candidates argue is deeply corrupt. Liberals must be empowered to bring bad actors to heel through robust intervention of government," end quote. Well, here to help us analyze this leftward lurch of the Democratic Party, represented by last night's presidential debate, is Dr. Dave Bratt. He is the dean of Liberty School of Business and former Virginia congressman. Dave, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for having me on.
Well, good to hear your voice. Let me ask you this: Do you agree with the analysis of Harris, the editor of Politico, that the Democratic Party has been transformed into a party that's almost unrecognizable from 20 years ago?
Yeah, I do. I only differ with the term liberal. The Democrat Party has become the statist party. They want big government and a big state And I want to congratulate you on the work you're doing on religious liberty. And one of the most telling aspects is if you asked any of the Democrat presidential candidates for the United States of America what their religion is, they will not answer the question. And they will not identify with any religion. And that should send tremors. Because that has to do with first principles, right? So if you can't identify religion, then can you identify a God? And that, if you can't identify a God, that I don't think the American people understand that yet, what is really at stake. And so they are not classical liberals that believed in an open space, an open public square where everyone could share equally in their ideas. The Protestants made that compromise. And now that compromise has been abused. And so I agree with him that the Democrat Party is unrecognizable. And we saw it last night on the policy positions as well. But philosophically, they're way off.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Dave. And I want to ask you to define that a little bit for our listeners, because, you know, part of what we try to do here is we want to educate. But define the difference between the statist as in contrast to the liberal.
Yeah, well, the classical liberal, you know, came out of the Judeo-Christian tradition. We believe that God, you know, God wanted robots, that God can control and command. God could have done that, but he created us with free will. And so we believe in the freedom of conscience, ultimately, first and foremost. And then when you get in the public square, we enshrine that right to freedom of conscience and the rights of free expression and association and religion through our Constitution. And all the founders knew you had to establish a moral population in order to have sound government. And all of them were within a fairly tight-knit conception of the Judeo-Christian tradition. Well, these days, that sphere of liberty has now been violated by the left, and they want political control. And so they are expanding the state. And at the same time, when you get hugely controversial events like Charlottesville, et cetera, the liberal press will come after the Republicans and accuse you, right? They should be asking the Democrats, right, who believe in the big state, why they believe in enhancing the state. And if they're worried about President Trump on any matter and matters of state control, the best thing to do is to withdraw the size and scale and growth of the federal government. And so it becomes very clear, right, when you have trillion-dollar deficits year after year after year, which party is having the spending spree and offering free education, free health care, free government, everything. Well, that all of that is the federal government growing and growing and growing. And that is all of our founders, conservative, liberal, all the way up to about 1960 or 70, would have agreed with that. Kennedy would have been horrified at the current size of a federal state and a good Catholic. He would have been horrified at the lack of the party's affiliation with the broader Judeo-Christian tradition and the liberal tradition of, you know, Jefferson, et cetera, and who all of which are now under full assault.
Right. As you point out, I think a very clear indication of that classic liberalism being lost, as you say, the rights of conscience. And last, I want to play a couple clips here. Here's a clip of Senator Warren of Massachusetts asked by Lester Holt about her extreme views on abortion. Let's listen to this clip.
Senator Warren, would you put limits on any limits on abortion?
I would make certain that every woman has access to the full range of reproductive health care services, and that includes birth control, it includes abortion, it includes everything for a woman.
And that, by necessity, includes that every American would be forced to participate in something they disagree with.
Yeah, well, and she's contradicted herself. You know, she's Harvard Law, and is very smart, and so she knows she's in a contradiction. But she says everyone. There's no debate about human DNA, right? We're not talking about the lives of animals, et cetera. The Democrats always say, let's follow science. Well, you know, my dad was a doctor, and I grew up there. I have very liberal philosophy colleagues at colleges, they wouldn't even deny, right? What we're talking about is human life. So when they say everyone is protected, what they mean is everyone except the baby.
Right.
And
exactly.
So they have a huge contradiction at the front and center of their position, which you learn in eighth grade biology. It's not a dog's DNA. It's not a frog's DNA. It's distinct human DNA.
Well, of course, the media is not going to call them out on that. Dr. Bratt, stick with us. We're up against a break. We're going to come back. Got a few more clips and want to get your analysis on a little bit more. Folks, don't go away. Coming back with more Washington Watch right after these messages.
Did you know that babies survive failed abortions? Sadly, many of these babies are denied their human right to life and are allowed to die. Currently, there is no federal criminal statute in place to protect these babies after they are born alive. Congress and state legislatures across the country have responded by putting forth legislation to protect infants who survive abortion. However, leftist politicians have blocked efforts in Congress and in state legislatures to pass the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which requires that life-saving medical care be given to babies born alive after failed abortion attempts. We must decide as a country where we stand on the issue of infanticide, to either pursue humane protections for those most vulnerable in our society, or continue to subject innocent human life to the whims of abortionists. For more information, visit frc.org/bornalive. Today, military personnel are at greater risk than ever of suffering from a mental health condition. On average, 21 active and retired military members take their own lives every day. Richard Gleason, a military and veteran advocate in the area of mental health, recently shared evidence that faith-based solutions can help stop this crisis. Here's what Richard had to say.
There's new science out that they watch people while they're praying or have a religious relationship. The frontal part of their brain, if I'm correct in remembering what they told me, it strengthens it. It reduces depression, reduces anxiety and stress while you're doing it. So not only did God give us prayer as a way to alleviate our spirit, it also alleviates our mind and our bodies. Our bodies react in a positive way to a faith-based relationship.
Visit frc.org/speakers to hear more.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Joining me, my guest in this segment, Dr. David Bratt, Dean at Liberty School of Business, former congressman from Virginia. All right, Dave, I got another clip. This is one of my kind of favorites, you know, talking about illogical. This is former Secretary of Housing and Urban Development and San Antonio Mayor Julian Castro. He brought up abortion in the transgender community to, I guess, check two boxes at one time. But if I mean, you just got to listen to this. All right, let's listen to this clip.
Yep.
Just because a woman, or let's also not forget someone in the trans community, a trans female, is poor, doesn't mean they shouldn't have the right to exercise that right to choose. And so I absolutely would cover the right to have an abortion.
Okay. Help me on this one. Someone in the trans community having abortion, is this a male who thinks he's a female? What am I missing here?
Well, yeah, the whole thing is illogical from the start. He's talking about the right to do what you want, but then he immediately jumps to not the right, but the federal funding is what he's getting at there. And for who? For I don't know who. Why abortion comes up in the trans debate? And so yeah, the whole thing is just you could tell exactly what it is. I mean, there's no mystery. It's just clickbait, right? He said the term. He got the applause.
Right.
They're just racing to move that needle. He moved the needle. He came out, right? He's one of the winners of the debate last night in terms of the you know, the liberal talking heads, because he hit the clicks.
Yeah. I've got another clip of him discussing open borders. Play clip number three.
My plan also includes getting rid of Section 1325 of the Immigration and Nationality Act, to go back to the way we used to treat this when somebody comes across the border, not to criminalize desperation.
I mean, this is where the Democratic Party is going. No borders. Without borders, how can you have a country?
Yeah, and that's called the Texas slap down there. He was slapping down Beto, who's also far left, and Beto made the crucial mistake on the left of believing in any semblance of the law. He was just proposing that it go, you know, from being against the law, you know, a criminal offense, to being a lesser crime, and just leaving that in law. And they got into a debate, and Julian Castro said, "No, we want no law whatsoever on the border."
So, I mean, it's a race to see who can be the most liberal.
Yeah, and that's it. I mean, when you're talking about liberals, classical liberals used to understand that freedom and your liberty and your rights come precisely because of the law.
Right.
Any nation without the law in the history of nations, you did not have freedom. So it's kind of an irony, right? You get freedom because of you're bound by the law.
Well,
they want to get rid of the law and act like you're going to have freedom. It's right. A fallacy.
Well, absolutely. We've talked about that, because you can't, without the law, you can't have justice. And without justice,
sure, exactly.
You can't have freedom and fairness. And so what they want to do, they want to tear down the very thing that attracts people to this country.
Right. And it is shocking. I think half the American people get that one. I think the numbers are with us on the border. And then the economic piece, if anyone comes across, you got two kids in school, that's $24,000 a year for two kids. And who's paying that bill? And the average middle-income family knows they're going to pay the bill. The companies have figured out how to get out of it. On Obamacare, the companies, the big corporations have gotten out of paying the health care bill. And now on illegal immigration, they want to get out of paying high wages and paying for public goods like education. And so it is interesting, right? The left has that part right, the big corporate stuff. But if you look at who has more millionaires these days, Bernie and all the Warren, you know, that they're raising more money from millionaires than the Republicans ever dreamed of. So it's all upside down.
Exactly. I've got another clip I want to play before we run out of time, Dr. Brett.
Right.
We had scripture interjected last night from Democratic Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey, but it had to do with the Second Amendment. Here's what he said.
This is something that I'm tired of, and I'm tired of hearing people, all they have to offer is thoughts and prayers. In my faith, people say faith without works is dead.
Obviously talking about the shootings that have taken place, saying that faith without works is dead, saying it's time to basically confiscate guns.
Yeah, well, we could have a lot of theological fun, right? That's James and Luther called it the straw epistle or whatever, so he didn't go into any detail on his faith, but the Democrats, this is what I was getting at earlier, the only time they invoke God or religion is when it's useful politically. They never invoke it as a system of thought that guides their thinking, their policy, the construction of the Constitution. Republicans have been bound by that, and we've been playing against political professionals who just, you know, come to a knife fight with a gun. And
true.
So, you know, our side needs to learn to get a lot more shrewd when it comes to the politic. We all saw what the Democrats did last time at the polling booth, and the manipulations they used with the texting, and just the gazillions of dollars they poured down out of the sky. And so our side just needs to get active. We need to get business back. The left threatens businesses.
Right.
Who dare to say anything common sense in the public square, and we have to end that, or we're going to lose our country.
And we see what's at stake from last night's debate. Dr. Dave Brett, as always, great to talk with you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Tony. Appreciate it.
All right. Folks, stick around. I'm going to give you my favorites from last night next. Don't go away.
Today, military personnel are at greater risk than ever of suffering from a mental health condition. On average, 21 active and retired military members take their own lives every day. Richard Gleaston, a military and veteran advocate in the area of mental health, recently shared evidence that faith-based solutions can help stop this crisis. Here's what Richard had to say.
There's new science out that they watch people while they're praying or have a religious relationship. The frontal part of their brain, if I'm correct in remembering what they told me, it strengthens it. It reduces depression, reduces anxiety and stress while you're doing it. So not only did God give us prayer as a way to alleviate our spirit, it also alleviates our mind and our bodies. Our bodies react in a positive way to a faith-based relationship.
Visit frc.org/speakers to hear more. If you're like me, you care about the future of our country. Now more than ever, it is vital that we stand up for biblical values. This year, you can. Come to the annual Values Voter Summit in Washington, D.C. on October 11th through the 13th and join thousands of Americans like you who want to change the culture so that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. This year, we're calling on Americans to pray, to vote, and to stand firm as we fight back to win the culture. Invited and confirmed speakers include Dana Lesh, Sebastian Gorka, Bill Bennett, Laura Ingraham, and Reverend Franklin Graham. Now is the time to stand for truth. There will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a biblical worldview on issues like religious liberty, the LGBT movement, the sanctity of life, the realities of socialism, and more. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org. Did you know that babies survive failed abortions? Sadly, many of these babies are denied their human right to life and are allowed to die. Currently, there is no federal criminal statute in place to protect these babies after they are born alive. Congress and state legislatures across the country have responded by putting forth legislation to protect infants who survive abortion. However, leftist politicians have blocked efforts in Congress and in state legislatures to pass the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which requires that life-saving medical care be given to babies born alive after failed abortion attempts. We must decide as a country where we stand on the issue of infanticide, to either pursue humane protections for those most vulnerable in our society, or continue to subject innocent human life to the whims of abortionists. For more information, visit frc.org/bornalive.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. By the way, it's Thankful Thursday. What are you thankful for? I'm thankful for a lot. Anyway, thankful that I can do this radio program and talk with you each and every day. Well, I should not each and every day, Monday through Thursday, sometimes on Friday. Glad that Sarah Perry fills me in on Fridays. That's usually a trap. Fills in for me on Fridays. That's a travel day. But anyway, let me remind you, we've got folks standing by to take your calls. If you would like to partner with us to make sure that Washington Watch continues going on the airwaves across the country, 800-225-4008, 800-225-4008. Or you can go to TonyPerkins.com. Earlier today, I chaired actually my first hearing on Capitol Hill as chairman of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom on Turkey. Not going to spend much time talking about that, but it was interesting. I had Dr. Brunson, Andrew Brunson, here testifying along with a panel of other Turkish experts. And, you know, this issue of religious freedom, it's a complex one, but it's an essential one. And I'll probably talk more about that later. But joining me now in studio, Vice President of Policy and Governmental Affairs, Travis Weber. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony.
You were at the hearing earlier today that we had on Capitol Hill. You know, the religious freedom is often intertwined with freedom of speech and other issues. It's a fairly complex issue.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting hearing a lot of good perspectives and insight into the situation in Turkey. I think the freedom of speech and religion intertwining you mentioned is is significant for us because here in the United States, we have had and generally still have really robust protections for free speech in a way that other parts of the world, Western Europe, Canada, elsewhere, don't understand. They don't have the history we have on that. And their current level protections are much more easily there's lower than what we have right now. The free speech angle to this, how we think about religious freedom, very important because it also affects how we can communicate the message of our faith and how others of different faiths can communicate their messages. We want a free marketplace of ideas, and free speech allows that.
And as we look at that internationally, you know, we have to be reminded that, you know, that's something here we have to preserve at home. And as we look at, we continue our discussion, I told folks I was going to play some of my favorite clips from last night. And, you know, look, I disagree with almost everything that was said, but I'm thankful that we can actually have these types of political debates in this country where you can have people who are the polar opposites of what, you know, you might think. But as a country, we have the freedom to be able to do that.
It's a good point, Tony. The danger is not when we hear a view we disagree with and we can articulate an opposing view. The danger is when we don't even know of a view that's being articulated and being worked into governmental programs and the seat of government power because the airwaves are shut down, the opportunity for debate is shut down. So what we don't hear about in terms of what's affecting government policy and a society and freedom is actually oftentimes more dangerous.
And that's kind of what we heard about Turkey today, was the loss of the freedom of speech intertwined with freedom of religion. It was more of any message that would any way contradict or challenge the present leadership. That's what was banned.
And governments will often use certain justifications they think they can use to crack down on religious freedom, whether terrorism, violence, instability, national security, public order. They'll put forth a term which they can try to fit enough wiggle room into to justify infringing on freedom of religion. We saw this with Pastor Brunson's case. As you know, we were there in Turkey for that hearing last fall. And this is why it's important to really lay out clearly the principles of religious freedom we're trying to defend and have those pretty clearly protected in law as clearly as we can. There's always going to be a little bit of judgment where matters end up in courts and there's a judgment call about whether the state has an interest. Even in our law, RFRA, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, allows that. It's understandable. But the line is on the line is drawn in a way very protective of religious freedom. We need to be as clear as we can about this. You leave government that power, they're going to abuse it.
Well, with that backdrop, let's get back to some of the clips from last night, some of my favorite clips. I mean, there was 10 candidates on the stage. I think there were 5 moderators to try to balance things out. Moderator Chuck Todd asked a simple question to every candidate, kind of a rapid-fire type question. It was the greatest geopolitical threat. Here's what the candidates had to say.
Who is the geopolitical threat to the United States? Just give me a one-word answer, Congressman Delaney.
Well, the biggest geopolitical challenge is China, but the biggest geopolitical threat remains nuclear weapons.
Totally get it. Go ahead, Governor Inslee.
The biggest threat to the security of the United States is Donald Trump, and there's no question. Okay.
Congresswoman Gabbard.
The greatest...
This geopolitical threat.
The greatest threat that we face is the fact that we are at a greater risk of nuclear war today than ever before in history.
Senator
Klobuchar. Two threats, economic threat, China, but our major threat right now is going on in the Mideast with Iran if we don't get our
try to keep it at one or two words.
Our existential threat is climate change. We have to confront it before it's too late.
Senator Warner.
Climate change.
Yeah. Senator Booker.
Nuclear.
Secretary Castro.
Say China and climate change.
Congressman Ryan.
China without a question.
And Mr. Mayor.
Russia, because they're trying to undermine our democracy.
Based on the audience reaction, I think the greatest political threat they would say is climate change and Donald Trump.
Tony, I had the same thought. You know, it's heartening to actually hear some of them say China, which I would agree we need to deal with. The fact that they're cheering for seriously trying to claim that President Trump and climate change are the greatest threats we face right now. I mean, exposes the silliness of some of these things. We don't know. They're obviously in this debate format. They're looking for to act in that context, but it's really kind of silly if you step back and think about it.
But I think some of them need to be held accountable, though, where they would say that China is the greatest threat, Iran, What are they doing to advance? And for instance, I think that was Senator Warren that said Iran was the greatest threat. I mean, what are they doing to help advance America's position? Is she supporting the president? Usually, I think she's trying to hinder the work the administration is doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. When they when they're going to be public, obviously this debate is very public. It's being reported. It's in the news. Take a position here. Okay, that's one thing. What are you doing? What actions are you taking to back up that public statement? Are you putting your money where your mouth is, so to speak, and actually trying to get constructive work done, bring solutions to the table where the president is trying to address Iran and China, trying to work with them? And it, you know, I think some folks probably are, but there's often a lot of fluff and sort of public division at these kind of debates.
Travis, they each got a closing statement, and this is, I say, my favorite, probably just because it's so outlandish. It's close to Mayor Castro's transgender abortions. I mean, that was so crazy. But this one comes from Washington Democratic Governor Jay Inslee. And this was in his closing address. And it was, again, it was on the issue of climate change. Here's that clip.
I decided that on my last day on Earth, I wanted to look them in the eye and tell them I did everything humanly possible to protect them from the ravages of the climate crisis. We can save ourselves. We can save our children. We can save our grandchildren. And we can save literally the life on this planet. This is our moment.
Travis, I don't even know where to begin with that one.
There's a lot to analyze here, you know, in so many ways. I think this, you know, provides a glimpse into a sort of foundational worldview difference, depending on how you look at a statement like that.
Well, we can save ourselves. We can save our children. I mean, there's a theological layer to this, which I think they see God, government as God, ability to deliver, that we have to save ourselves. Well, first off, man cannot save himself. Every breath we have is given to us by God. We have no control of the next breath we take. So there's a theological layer to this, but there's also a very practical layer. And I think one of the reasons the left is enamored with, intoxicated with climate change is, number one, how can you ever hold them to account? I mean, when can you, even if we can change, and I'm not arguing that the environment is not affected by man. Clearly they are. Anytime, I mean, we occupy this planet, we have an effect upon it. But to say that we can fix this problem, you can't measure that. There's no way you could hold someone in a 4-year, 8-year administration saying, oh, yes, we ended the issue of the threat of climate change.
There is a serious question about accountability. And in addition to just domestically, you look, this is a global issue. So you look around the world, you look at so many problems we have with bad actors, North Korea, China, Iran, others. We can't get them to do the right thing on something that's visible, observable, measurable, including treatment of people in horrific situations, violating human rights, religious freedom. We can't even get them to come to the table on that. How are we going to get them to come to the table on something as immeasurable where you can shift accountability, push something across your border internationally? I mean, this is just – it's not realistic.
And in order to pursue this elusive goal, they have to take over more power and more authority. Whether that be nations or individuals, this is a dangerous pursuit.
It is. And Tony, as you point out, the layers to this statement, you know, the Christian thinks about this very differently. You know, this world is not our home. We're called to steward it, care for it.
Absolutely.
Right. And, you know, if I go out my front door, if there's trash on the street, I'm kind of compelled. I want to pick that up and clean it up. I want to beautify my neighborhood, my street. We're obviously all called to do that, but that's much different from sort of these mass, immeasurable problems which allow people to shift blame onto each other and are just sort of divorced from reality and facts and accountability in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I am a conservationist. In my record in the legislature, I actually pushed measures like that because I do believe we are to be good stewards of this environment. And we have been as a nation. I mean, we have improved our air quality. We've reduced emissions. We have improved water quality. And we need to continue to make improvement as technology gives us that ability to do even better. But what they're calling for in this massive power grab and tyrannical government that would be required to impose their solution to climate change will actually stifle the very technology and advancements that we can use to improve our environment.
And Tony, you mentioned a number of ways in which we've focused on this. I'll add the national parks. We've set aside areas to care for, to preserve our environment and highlight that and share in the beauty of people who may differ in so many other things, but they go to these national parks and they appreciate the beauty that's in our nation. I think this statement we've been discussing really kind of exposes a split in how a Christian worldview comes to bear on these issues. You listen to the tone of that statement, the last thing on one's deathbed, et cetera, et cetera. It's apocalyptic. It's very, you know, almost sort of doomsday-ish. And we don't have this mentality. We know this world is not our home. We're all to care for it, but we're not going to ultimately look to save it in an ultimate sense and call upon coercive government to do that. We're called to redeem society through the innovative, freedom-focused ways that occur outside of government, through the church and religious institutions and other ways.
That's a big distinction between those who have a biblical worldview, a Christian worldview, knowing that God created the planet, He created all things, the universe, He created everything that exists, and He also sustains it. Now, we're here, we have a responsibility to take care of it, but God is the one who, you know, says when it's over. And I don't think we don't live in fear of the future. As Christians, we shouldn't. We have nothing to fear about the future. You know, I often hear, you know, we heard this nuclear threat. Yeah, I'm concerned about some place like North Korea getting nuclear weapons. I think we should do all that we can to prevent that. But I'll say, as a believer, we don't have to live in fear. I don't stay up at night worrying about that. In fact, I don't stay up at night worrying about anything unless I've had caffeine. I mean, the reality is, as Christians, we can live in peace because our focus, and whether or not we see a conservative in the White House after the next election or a liberal, you know, our peace is still the same. Now, the circumstances may be different, but our eyes are set on something else, God, not government.
Yeah, our eyes are set in a much different place than someone who knows only this world. You know, Tony, and just thinking about the world's an incredibly powerful, beautiful place. As human beings, we want to care for it and steward it, but there are things that are not in our control. If I go out into the ocean and swim, I may be overpowered by riptide. I don't have full, masterful command over all my circumstances in every respect. And this is an important point to remember as we're in the world. It's an awesome, majestic place. We must do what we can with the things we can control, but there are some things that we must just trust to God and rest in Him and not try to grasp onto and think falsely that we can ultimately have the final say over them.
Well, there are things we can affect. One of those things is elections. And when we look at the policy ideas and proposals being put forth by two major competing sides as reflected in their party platforms, the choices are very clear. The differences are stark. Travis Weber, out of time. Thanks so much for stopping by and joining me in this conversation of last night's debate.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. Folks, out of time. If you'd like more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.